Welcome to Season 11 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Coaching. Coaching is unlocking people's potential and helping them learn rather than teaching them. Wise words from the late John Whitmore, a man that made a big impact on this week's guest, Michael Bungay Stanier. Michael is the founder of Box of Crayons, a company focused on giving managers practical coaching skills so they can coach in 10 minutes or less. And he is also the author of Do More Great Work and his latest book, The Coaching Habit. How to be a better coach is a question I get all the time. John, I want to be a better coach for my people. Or John, how do we get our managers to be better coaches? Well, you get your answer on this week's show. Michael shares some incredible advice about how to be to executable things to help you become a better coach. He talked about the new habit formula, which I think is so powerful, and anybody can apply it today, which I think is the real beauty of Michael and the simplicity that he brings to the table. I am 100% confident that you're going to learn new things from Michael that you can apply no matter your role, because anybody can become a better coach. So without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with the one and only Michael Bungay Stanier. Just want to take a quick moment to say thank you. Last week's blog, The Real Cost of Poor Leadership, reached over 170,000 people on LinkedIn. I'm just so deeply humbled and grateful for the people that have spoken in my life and helped me then transfer that to others. If you haven't had a chance, you can read it on our blog, learnloftblog.com, or just by searching The Real Cost of Poor Leadership on LinkedIn. Well, Michael, thanks for being on the show.
It's so good to be here. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, your thinking and your writing has made a big impact on me, and certainly anyone that's done any real study of the leadership / coaching profession has come across your name. How do you think about coaching, or what's the best definition of coaching that you use with your clients?
Yeah, there are a bazillion different definitions of coaching. I don't think there is a definitive definition of coaching. So there's different ways of describing it. Are you trying to describe that behavior, or are you trying to describe the outcome? When we talk about it, our whole point is saying to managers and leaders, look, coaching, stop freaking out. You don't have to be a weird, touchy-feely HR person to benefit from being more coach-like. And we talk about that. Don't become a coach, become more coach-like. And the behavior change we talk about, it's simple but difficult. Can you stay curious a little bit longer? Can you rush to action and advice giving just a little bit more slowly? Because it turns out that most managers and leaders, and honestly human beings, are advice giving maniacs. I mean, they love to tell people what to do. They don't even know what the problem is, but they're kind of like, I think I have the answer for you. So the behavior change is, can you stay curious a little bit longer? The outcome, and I think this is a virtuous circle. So I think there's three parts to this virtuous circle. With good questions, you generate new insight about yourself, new insight about the situation that you're in. New insight could lead to behavior change. In other words, you do something as a result of that new insight. And that new behavior change, so insight, action, leads to impact, an increase in impact. And then in a perfect world, that kind of circles back around, and that increase in impact helps you gain new insight about yourself and about the situation. So it kind of builds on itself.
Yeah.
Well, so that's how I talk about the outcome, insight, action, impact, and the behavior change, stay curious a bit longer, rush to action and advice a little bit slower.
Well, I know, and I think I've even heard you say something, I don't know who you got this from, but you said it was coaching is unlocking people's potential and helping them learn rather than teaching them.
Right. And let me tell you, because this deserves its acknowledgement. That's from John Whitmore.
John Whitmore, yeah.
And he's one of the fathers of coaching who sadly died about a month ago.
Yeah.
But his book, Coaching for Performance, is another one of the classics in the field. So a good book for people to know about.
Well, I've
got a brand new edition out. Sorry, yeah. John.
No. I think it's one of your strengths is giving credit where credit is due. I think we all could learn from that. So I'm very much admire that about you. But just that idea of unlocking someone's potential and and helping them learn rather than teaching them. And I think it's just beautifully said. But the question that I really want to get to the core of is, why is it so important? Why is it important for someone to do that for somebody else?
That's a really big existential question. Just like, why are we on this planet? what's the point of it all? And I don't have that answer. But here's my personal belief. We are on this planet for a very short period of time.
In the grand scheme of things.
In the grand scheme of things. I mean, I read this in a Bill Bryson book once, fantastic writer. And he said, look, if you stretch your arms out, if you stand up and you stretch your arms out, so you've got a wingspan, and if this wingspan represents the billions of years that the Earth has been around, six billion years, I think it is, well, humankind has been around, modern human, for the period of time represented by the sliver of one of your fingernails. So it's like, we are gone in a blink. So what do we do with this one and precious life? Because it's our one and only shot at it. And I think one of the things that we can do is go, what could I do? What is my potential? Who could I be in this world? And for me, it's about, and what could I do that makes this world a better place? So do you need to do it for others? I think that's the one flaw in that John Whitmore quote about helping others unlock their potential, which is it kind of puts the onus on the coach, whereas the real piece, and, this has been said a billion times before by smarter people than me, know thyself, have the knowledge, the insight about who you are and who you could be and what your values are and what you could do in this world. Step into action around that. Have the courage, have the good fortune to be able to do that. Have better impact in this world. So it comes down to that inside action impact piece about. But it's such a big question, John, but it boils down to it. It's like, it's your one and only life. What else are you going to do?
Well, and when you think of doing that for somebody else, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even though they're ultimately we talk so much about the power of choice in leadership and to promote standards in order for an individual to choose to be at their best. But to think that as a leader in an organization or a leader at home or wherever you're leading people, to help them become the best version that they can be,
right?
In them discovering it, I mean, I'm just not sure there's anything better you can do. So I think it's just I agree. It is a big question. Now, we get this question a lot about leadership, which is, can anyone be a great leader? Well, I want to pose the question to you. Can anybody be a good coach?
I think everybody can be a bit more coach-like. Because remember, we've set a pretty clear, simple behavior change, which is, can you just shut up with the advice for a little bit? That's it. We're saying, can you stay curious a little bit longer? We're not saying, can you never give advice? Because that's ridiculous. There's a place for advice. But how do you just ask a few more questions before you leap into telling people what to do? And I think anybody can do that. It's a learned habit. It's a learned behavior. Can anybody be an awesome executive coach? I don't think so. I think they're people who have the training and the inclination and the skills are better executive coaches than others. But that's not what we're about. We're about saying to everybody, every manager, every leader, you can be a bit more coach-like. Let me give you some simple tools to help with that.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the word habits. And before we jump into habits, which I definitely want to get into, one of the most popular questions we get from people or we hear from people is, my manager is XYZ and I just don't know how to move past them, right? Or I just can't get them to think these new ideas are good, or they're just there for the status quo. So we talk a lot about kind of coaching to someone that might report to you. Is there a way for a younger person or a younger professional to coach up?
I think there is. I mean, I do think that sometimes you just get a manager or a leader who kind of sucks. Like, okay, but to your point, and this is what you teach, right, which is around what choices do I have here? You know, what are my options? What can I control? And, you know, in the end, you don't get to control much. You get to control your own reactions, your own behavior. That's kind of it. You don't even get to control your emotions. Your emotions happen. But how you choose to respond to that emotion, to that situation, that is within your circle of choice and control. So ironically, you get to control a whole lot less than you think. However, you get to influence a whole lot more than you might give yourself credit for. So part of what you do with a bad manager, and this isn't particularly helpful, but I'll say it anyway, is you get to learn what it's like to work with a bad manager. And you go, what is this teaching me? You know, what is this telling me? And it invites you to be ingenious, going, how do I manage around this? How do I work differently with this? How do I find hacks to work with this manager? Or it invites you to be more courageous, to say, how do I leave this manager and go find a different role or a different position? Or how do I have this conversation to somebody to say, this manager is unacceptable, what are we going to do about this? So having a bad manager is a curse, but it's potentially a blessing as well, because it can open up all sorts of different opportunities with you. Mm-hmm. You know, the last formal manager I had, terrible. I mean, just terrible. And it was miserable at the time. It was miserable for about 3 years afterwards, because even though, you know, I'd left, every time I thought about him, I get all twitchy and wound up and angry and frustrated. And I'm like, wow, he's not even here anymore. And I'm still getting wound up by this. But incredibly valuable, because when I think of who I am striving not to be when I manage and lead my own team, I have this man in mind. And I'm like, okay, I see him for his flaws. But the other thing I've tried to do is try and be compassionate about him. I mean, he was in a hard position. The business was under pressure. He was responsible for a lot. He was struggling. And there's a degree to which it's like, to what degree can this bad manager help you build a sense of empathy and compassion with that person? Mm. Sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned
that. But
all
of those are options and choices you have.
Well, you said that, you know, this might not be helpful. I think it was extremely helpful, right? I mean, all those things are very real options and choices people can make. You mentioned habits, and this is an area I really want to go. And I know you had the opportunity to be part of Marshall Goldsmith's 100 Coach Project.
That's
I do want you to touch on that a little bit. But I've learned a lot from Marshall over the years, and one of my favorite stories is the empty boat. And I don't know. I'm kind of curious from your perspective. I know it's kind of tied to habits, the empty boat theory, but tell our audience a little bit about that, if you're familiar with it, and or maybe what's your favorite lesson you've learned from Marshall that you begin to implement today?
Well, I mean, he's a influential teacher, and you know, my memory, when you say the empty boat story, what the story I think about is choosing how to react to something. And you know, if you're on a boat in a stream and this empty boat came towards you and then bumped into you, you wouldn't really get angry at it, because you're like, what's the point? It's an empty boat.
That's right.
But you know, if there's somebody in that boat or somebody's winding you up, you're like, I'm going to pick a fight with them because they're out to get me, or whatever it might be. And so this whole idea of kind of, you know, Marshall says he's a Buddhist, and that kind of sense of detachment, and without putting judgment and meaning on the stuff that happens to you, is a way of staying more serene longer. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing I learned from Marshall. He's known for all sorts of things like his triggers and feed forward and what got you here won't get you there. But this 100 Coach project of his is really a gathering of amazing people. He's like, people apply, but he reaches into his own network and says, I'm picking these people to be part of my 100 coaches. And it's not entirely unclear how I got selected, but I did, so I'll take it. And there's something about, he is a very good host. And one of the things that I'm learning from him and I want to become better at is, how do I become a gracious, generous, inclusive host so that I can bring more people into the same circles with each other and be a person who makes connections between other people? Because I've learned some from Marshall and hearing him talk and teach, but much of that I knew already because I'd read his books and I'd seen videos and the like. What's was unexpected was how many new friends I've made as being part of this circle.
I think he's just an incredible connector. And I think the old quote, people need to be reminded more than they need to be taught. And when you get a group of people like that in a room, there's a lot of good knowledge in the room. So
you might
not teach that many new things, but teaching principles like that of building a network and being good connectors for other people. I mean, those things, they're great human being characteristics.
Exactly.
So I appreciate you sharing that story too. And I know he's really big on habits, and you've talked a lot about, you know, the importance, you know, even when you look at the title of the book, The Coaching Habits.
Right. And in fact, the first chapter is about habits, because the purpose of the book, just like the purpose of our training, is to have people do things differently. And most people don't need new content to do things differently. They need the mechanisms to do things differently. So we start off teaching about habits, drawing on people like Charles Duhigg and BJ Fogg and Leo Babauta and others, to say, here's the science and art of building new habits. You can apply this to everything. But now let me teach you the 7 good questions that we think are most powerful for most managers and leaders to be more coach-like, and pick one of those to start building your coaching habit.
Yeah. Well, this idea of habits, right? You have something called the new habit formula, which I think, I think it's a very simple way to think about the decisions that we make as human beings.
Right.
Let's go through it real fast, just in terms of, you know, how someone could apply this immediately to look at their habits, because we know we all say we're going to change something and then they rarely ever change.
Yeah. So it's got 3 simple parts. It's something I came up with, but it's me standing on the shoulder of giants. You know, I'm not creating something out of something that wasn't there before. The 3 parts are this: when this happens, so that's when you identify the circumstance, the situation, the trigger. Instead of, that's when you identify the old habit, the old behavior that you don't want to do anymore. I will, and this is when you identify a new habit that you can complete in 60 seconds or less. So in the context of coaching, you know, it's like when John comes into my office and complains about how hard his life is, like he always does. That's the when this happens. Instead of me jumping in to go, poor you, John, let me fix it for you, and kind of rescuing him. That's the old habit I'm trying to break. I will ask him a coaching question. So what's the real challenge here for you, John? Right? So now I've found a circumstance, I found a trigger, I understand the old behavior I'm looking to change. And now, rather than just going, oh, I'm trying to be more coach-like and hoping it's going to happen, now I've actually got a person, a moment, a behavior, and I'm going to know how I'm doing it. You know, did I do it? Did I not do it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the thing. Now, you can do this for everything. It's like when this happens, I get up in the morning. Instead of going and checking my email, because that's what I always do, I will put on my running shoes and step out the door. So, you know, this is a habit to get fit and maybe go for a run or a walk in the morning. You're identifying the old thing that's holding you back. You're identifying the moment. You're identifying the new behavior, the new habit that you can do in 60 seconds or less.
And so you're not focusing on the run per se. You're just focusing on changing the small habit that will produce a run or a walk. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's BJ Fogg's insight here. You know, he's got a great website called tinyhabits.com and well worth checking out. But his whole thing is, if you're going to define a habit, define the micro habit, the kind of the micro, the first 60 seconds that kicks things off. because commit to that, because then you've got a little bit of momentum rather than going, I'm going to go for a run every morning, because your big brain will always find a reason to skip the run or give advice or whatever it might be.
Right. Well, you go through 7 questions, right, to help teach busy managers and build stronger teams that they could just have in their arsenal to use to be a better coach. And you mentioned one there. What's the real challenge here? Yeah. If you had, what's your favorite of the 7? We're not going to go through them all, but just, what's the one question that you think most leaders should be asking more and they simply don't?
Yeah. It's a tough question because, I took this down from a list of like 100 questions down to my top 7, so I kind of like them all. But if there was one question that I would say, here's something that you as a manager and a leader could start asking right away that could make a real difference. It's actually the very last question in the book, the learning question. And the learning question is, what was most useful or most valuable here for you? And you can add this at the end of pretty much every conversation you have with your direct teammate, at the end of a team meeting, when you're talking to a vendor or a customer or a client. What you're hoping is that they learn something from your conversation. What happens most of the time is nobody learns anything. They just rush on to the next thing. So what you're doing is you're creating a short pause where people are forced to reflect on what they're taking away from the conversation you've just had. What was most useful? What was most valuable here for you? And that's the question that I think people can start building into as a habit at the end of a conversation.
Yeah, well, it's good advice. And I think something that, sometimes you book in on the other end, you say, what's on your mind? Sometimes people just gloss right over that, but they almost rarely ask what was most useful. And even when you it's a simple concept that I think can be applied across the board. Last question, you get to give one advice to, your life now, if you've moved through your career, married, living in Toronto now, living all over the world. What one bit of advice would you give to our audience that just you just can't get out of your mind?
Well, the first thing to say is that be suspicious of anybody who's giving you advice because they don't really get what's going on. And so treat all advice with a degree of skepticism and, I'm not sure. The second piece would be there's something powerful about figuring out what you can say no to so that you can say yes to the stuff that matters most.
Well, we're 100% smarter for you coming on. We really appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a humble man, and I appreciate that about you. But there's a lot of wisdom, and we really, really appreciate you sharing such insight. Where can people find out more about the company and what it is that you do?
Perfect. So if you're interested in our coach training, boxofcrayons.com is the website. If you'd like to learn more about me, we've just got a new website up. It's kind of a holding page at the moment, but there's something there you can download, michaelbungaystania.com.
Awesome. We'll make sure to link to it in the show notes as well. Michael, thank you so much for doing this. You're fantastic.
My pleasure, John. A real pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Follow My Lead podcast. It would mean a great deal to us if you would share this episode with your friends or your colleagues, anyone that you think could help develop and grow as a leader, which in my estimation is everyone. So until next time, be a good leader at home and at work.